Hi, I'm Vicki Webb, and my favorite thing is gardening. So I think today we're going to talk about playing in the sunshine, getting dirty, and reminiscing about how far back our roots really go.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello and welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. I'm currently sitting in very cold leggings because Spidey decided it was a good idea to spill some cold coffee on me and my computer. And this is the third time I've tried to record the introduction because my linebacker cat, Cowboy, has walked across the keyboard twice and managed to select all and delete my introduction. And he's coming in for me again. This week, I interview Vicki Webb. Vicki and I grew up together in Terre Haute, Indiana. We met in junior high. And so this is half walk down memory lane and half talking about her favorite thing, which is gardening. And it's a really lovely episode. We talk about how nice heated floors are when it snows. And they just had a proper snow in London this weekend, and in Chicago we're set for a winter storm warning for tomorrow, so we may see some true snow and get a few cozy days in. I also, in Googling for the show notes and looking for a good picture of Gilbert Wilson's art. Gilbert Wilson was an artist who did murals in University School, which was my elementary school in Terre Haute, and Woodrow Wilson, junior high. So I grew up looking at Gilbert Wilson's murals, and I just found that there is a book out from the Hat and Beard Press, and it is a Gilbert Wilson illustrated volume of Moby Dick, plus a little biography that I've never seen before. So you can bet I snatched up that bundle. It was $60, but I'm really excited to have some Gilbert Wilson art in my house. In other news, this week my beloved Uncle Jimmy died. Ultimately, it was COVID, and we're all just heartbroken to say goodbye to truly one of the best people in our extended family. He volunteered. He was recognized for volunteering for 50 years with his fire department and for another 50 years with his water department. And those recognitions came in 2013 and 2015, and he continued his leadership in those organizations through the end of his life. So a collective 110, 115 years of volunteering in his community. So he had the biggest laugh. He would just start laughing and get real wheezy. And knee slapping, jovial, good person. He was a math teacher and superintendent, and we learned today he had the nickname Dr. Proctor. He didn't have a PhD, but it had a nice rhyme. So as I move into my last few months as president of my synagogue, I certainly think about the times that my Uncle Jimmy went on and off the executive team at his different, the different places he was a volunteer and leader, and how over the course of 50 years of involvement with an organization, you may take on a number of different roles. So I'm just thinking about that a lot. And the vaccine is rolling out. We have a new federal administration. The hope is that a coordinated federal response will save some lives. Until then, please wear your mask, wash your hands, stay home, and stay safe.
Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we find out about people's favorite things and get advice and recommendations without using an algorithm. This is a record-breaking week on the podcast for me. I am joined by Vicky Webb, live from the outskirts of London, who some listeners of the podcast knew her as Vicky Hosking back in the day in Terre Haute, Indiana. So Vicky is setting a record as the person I've known the longest joining me on my podcast. How are you doing today, Vicky?
I'm good, Leah. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. So we were catching up a little bit before I hit record. For folks listening, Vicky is, she works for Her Majesty the Queen, which none of us can say. And she is a senior civil servant for the government in the United Kingdom, which is a far cry from playing the clarinet.
Yes. Yep. And the tenor saxophone. I think I was second chair clarinet.
Yep.
Yeah.
At Woodrow Wilson Junior High.
I know. Takes us back. Let's not count how many years it is. Let's just say decades ago.
That's decades ago. It was the right number of years ago to have been in middle school band.
Indeed.
Yeah. So how is lockdown going? Because you are in the UK and you have had, it feels like from afar, it looks like a stricter lockdown protocol.
Yes, definitely. So before Christmas, so we're in our third wave of lockdown at the minute. And when the kids went back to school in September, we had three tiers. So like tier one was, you know, generally be careful and keep your 2 meter distance. Tier two was, I'm going to get this completely wrong, but, you know, pubs and restaurants still open and non-essential shops still going. And three was non-essential shops closed, pubs closing at 10 instead of the normal 11 late time. Yeah, exactly. Which made no sense because I think the first weekend they did it, loads of people got kicked out of the pub at 10 and were all congregating in town squares, you know, on their way home and trying to pack onto buses. So that didn't work. So then they introduced tier four, which was no pubs, but you could drink outside and get takeaways. And now we're in tier five. And tier five basically means the kids are not at school. And so we've been homeschooling here in London for the last 2 weeks, which is a joy if you're a home worker as well.
Yeah, it seems, I think everyone, like no matter what your situation is in COVID, there are other people you look at and you're like, whew, I couldn't handle that. And when I talk to my friends with kids at home, especially younger, I feel like, I don't know, like younger than 10, because managing Zoom is not, it's not intuitive. None of these tools are easy. So you've got to, like the level of executive function to like open and close Zoom classes and be in the right digital space at the right time is not something little kids can do.
No. And actually, for the first 2 weeks, we've only had like a sort of 15 minute call. And my 10-year-old can do her 10 o'clock call, no problem. So she goes up into her room and has a desk. It's no problem. But the 7-year-old who sits behind me here in the office never gets on. And through most of the call, you hear the poor teacher going, Aris, could you put yourself on mute? Alex, could you put yourself on mute? Because they managed to get themselves unmuted and then they can't mute themselves again, which is great because, I mean, that's all we do when we're having office calls, right?
Yeah.
Like you start chatting and then you go, oh, sorry, I forgot to take myself off mute.
Yeah.
So somebody somewhere has made a bingo chart for that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have you been... Now, have you worked from home this whole almost year, or have there been times when you've been in the office?
I have been into the office twice since St. Patrick's Day. So I think lockdown in London started on the 23rd, our first one, which was about 12 weeks long. And then our erstwhile prime minister said in the summer that, you know, people needed to get back to offices. But I was working for a department where that announcement came back. And then it was, but we actually haven't got the space to bring people in a COVID safe way. So we'll have to think about how that scales up. And then we went into our second lockdown, just as I was about to go into a sort of hybrid model where we were allowed to have a desk every 2 weeks within our kind of directorate. So that didn't work. Then my laptop died completely. So I had to go in to get the tech bar eventually to try and fix it. So I had one day in that office. But as I was saying to you before the call, I've just started working for a new department. And on my second day, I got to go in and see the new offices that my team will be managing a move to, which are completely empty. So that was actually quite nice.
That's
to get
cool.
a sort of wander down Whitehall and cycle in, which I'm missing doing. I'm missing the biking into work every day.
Yeah, I really miss commuting.
Yeah.
You know, I miss getting on the train. I miss, because we were talking that I got a Peloton in part because in Chicago and London, when you commute, there's so much incidental movement to your day.
Yeah.
You walk to the train station, you ride your bike. I mean, you have how long is your bike commute when you ride?
It depends how fast I am. It was down to about 30, 35 minutes from Northeast London down to Whitehall and back, and then back again. So yeah, it's about a 20K cycle every day round trip. And yeah, it's the decompression time that I miss. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you were talking about it, how to use your Peloton. Maybe you should like book yourself in for a cycle after work to get that might help break up the day.
Yeah, I think that would be great because that's something I talked to a friend about yesterday was just like, am I a before work person, a lunchtime? Am I like an 8 p.m.? But I do think as a way to create a boundary in between moving from my ThinkPad to my MacBook, going and commuting on my Peloton probably would be helpful.
Yeah, it's a good idea. We were doing morning walks in the morning when we could get the kids up early enough. Before our calls started. And that was a nice way to kind of set the day because you felt like you'd been out and then you come back to the house to sort of settle in. So we're hoping to start that again this week because school is moving to earlier, an hour earlier. So the kids are going to have a shock to the system to have to be up and ready and logged in for 9 o'clock again.
Yeah.
But
that'll be hard. Yeah. I miss the commute. I miss our company, the company where I work, they turned our badges off, I think, on like March 13th or 17th, right in there, where they weren't giving us the choice. They weren't saying, you know, make the best choice with the data available to you. They were just like, no, badges are off. You can't even sneak in.
Wow.
You know, this year, like time is meaningless, but this year is, I don't know, like 7 in quarantine years or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we travel back in time, to Terre Haute, Indiana, I'm going to share two memories that are like, I don't know. One is, I remember the day one year when we opened your pool.
Oh, yeah.
And we put the pool cover on your front lawn.
Yep.
And we used it as a slip and slide.
We did. That's a true story.
Was essentially us using our bodies to clean the algae off.
Yep, that is true. My parents had so many brilliant, like nuanced things that now as I get older, I'm like, oh, that was really smart. Like, yeah. They also, like, they taught me how to make pancakes when I was really, really little. And it was like a real treat for me to make Sunday morning pancakes. And it wasn't until I was like 25 that I was like, they slept in every Sunday and woke up and there were fresh pancakes in the kitchen. Like, no, they are geniuses. Absolute geniuses. So yeah, yes, we probably did. I imagine I feel like there was a lot of dish soap and it was very slippery. Like
very slippery. But safe enough, we never hit the road.
No.
Like you guys had like a long, it was a hill, but it wasn't a steep hill.
Yeah.
And
it was just the right size for a slip and slide.
Yeah. That was the size of a whole pool. And then I also remember the tiles in your house, because your house had geothermal energy.
And it did.
And you had these like tiles had these ridges to make it look like wood, but it wasn't wood. And you had to wear socks because if you were barefoot on those tiles, like it hurt your feet. They were so hot.
Really? So the kitchen had like flagstones, like really rough flagstones in it. And then there was...
this might have been in like, there was, the like, living room. Like, it was a room we didn't spend time. It was a room we, like, passed through.
Yeah. There was, like, a parquet floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That must have been on that.
I remember that.
I just remember those floors because when it was snowing and you came in from the snow, you could just lie down on the floor. Like, and it was so nice. And actually, when we moved into this house in London, we did lots of work to it. And they were talking about underfloor heating in the bathroom, which is like not a typical thing, but I suppose a thing that happens. And I was like, actually, I'd quite like it in the kitchen. And yeah. It hardly ever snows here. But when it has, to sort of sit there on the floor with the kids and watch the snow come down is like quite a delight.
Oh, that's so nice. So you put it in the kitchen and not the bathroom, or the kitchen and the bathroom?
No, just the kitchen. Just the kitchen.
That's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Well, my memories of you are, do you remember, I remember cycling with you a lot, like in a way that also I have thought since, like the fact that our parents let 12 to 15 year old girls cycle around most of that part of Terre Haute, like in people's neighborhoods, and that we were cycling, and you know, like we've noticed that there have been less people in London, or less, not today actually, we were in Broadway Market and it was absolutely packed, which was insane, just people walking. But I can remember cycling and like not always seeing cars, and like practicing cycling with no hands. And
because we would do your subdivision, the name Wood something, the name is out of my brain.
Woodridge. Yeah.
And it kind of backed up to Deming Park.
It did. Yeah.
And then we could go through Deming Park and then get to like Edge. Oh, my mom's going to be yelling at me. Then we get to the subdivision where like my aunt lived, that starts with an Edge, and Matthew Ulm lived in that neighborhood. And so that kind of was like backed up to Deming Park, and we could go through that.
Yeah.
And get to the stadium.
Yeah.
So the stadium doesn't have the golf course anymore, probably because of teenage girls riding their bikes through the golf course, because we couldn't be bothered to ride around the golf course.
We were supposed to ride around, weren't we? But we always shortcutted.
We always shortcutted and went through like the green.
It's a wonder that we never got like hit in the head by like a stray golf ball.
I know.
Because we didn't wear helmets then either. Like, it's illegal here, or it's illegal in New Zealand at least, to cycle without helmets. So yeah. Oh, those heady days.
Yeah. No, we rode our bikes everywhere, which was a blast, and picked up and like would grab different people depending on the neighborhood, which was super fun. Yeah, rode our bikes a ton. And then we would have these like massive girl sleepovers that kind of like rotated who hosted.
Yep. And yours was always the most fun, I thought, because we would listen to Dr. Demento tapes and watch Monty Python, which I remember coming home and saying, like, Leah and Jenny have played me Monty Python videos. We watched something called The Holy Grail. And my parents were like, oh, we had never thought of showing you that. That's so brilliant. And like, how fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And we would do remake Kids in the Hall sketches.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I wonder if anybody still has the videotapes anywhere.
Right, of us one after another walking downstairs behind your couch.
I can still sing all the words to These Are the Daves I Know.
I sing it to people all the time, and it turns out was not as popular a song as our memories tell us it was.
Okay, well, we can have another non-podcast chat where we just sing like Kids in the Hall references to each other at some time. Yeah.
So how did you get from Terre Haute to London? With most of your immediate family now still in New Zealand.
Yeah. So my dad is a Kiwi and mum's English. And I usually say to people, and I've been saying it a lot in my new team actually, that they couldn't decide where to live for 18 years. So I grew up in the States. when we finished high school, Dad had the opportunity to go back. His parents were older and kind of needed somebody a bit more nearby. And the cost of going to Northwestern, which was my like dream school, as an out-of-state person, was a little bit beyond my capabilities. So the option was to go to New Zealand. And I was also in that kind of wanderlust stage where I thought I was going to travel around Europe, like Julie Delphi and Before Sunrise, like in a train, and meet Ethan Hawke. So New Zealand seemed like the right next step. Mm-hmm. So I did a degree there in English literature and politics at Victoria University in Wellington. Can't beat Wellington on a good day, they say. And reconnected with my Kiwi roots. But I joined Accenture as a graduate there. Yeah. And I wasn't work in New Zealand when I was sort of coming through, but I had a British passport and there was loads of work in the UK. So 20 years ago, last year, I got posted to a project in Newcastle in England, and kind of I've been over here ever since.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but it's nice because my grandmother's still in Dover. So you might have remembered my grandmother from probably coming and telling us girls to be quiet when we were having sleepovers and things. I definitely remember her getting on the phone when I was talking on the phone as a teenager and going, "Your parents are trying to sleep and we can all hear you on the telephone." So yeah, she's still in Dover. She's still going strong at 91. So although we haven't seen her this much because of COVID and kind of restrictions and travel restrictions, I still talk to her a couple times a week. So
that's it's wonderful. Nice.
Yeah.
It's good to hear she's still alive, because I also have this really vivid memory of getting a postcard from you. You were in London, or you were in the UK. You were in Dover for the summer. You had said that like your grandma bought a farm.
Oh, yes. I didn't know that was a thing.
And I remember reporting back to my parents like, "Oh, well, Vicky's not back yet. It has something to do with her grandma buying a farm." And they were like, "Leah, bought the farm means someone has died." And you just very casually said in like a kind of rude way that her grandma has died. And I was like, "What?" And then I never followed up with you about it because I was so embarrassed not to know what the phrase meant. But I think you might have meant she actually literally bought land.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I don't remember her buying a farm, but she did. She inherited my great grandmother's like sort of house. Would we have called it a farm? It had chickens on it. I might have called it a farm as a teenager. My parents like live in a lifestyle block now and have chickens and horses and dogs. So I kind of think of that as the farm. But I guess going from suburban Terre Haute, I would have seen somewhere that had chickens and ducks and backed onto a big field in the Czech Republic as a farm. Possibly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's thrilling to me to learn that I was right. She literally bought a farm.
She literally got a farm. Yeah. So she, you know, she's still going strong.
Wonderful. And I think that's probably a good segue into what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah, the thing I love.
Although you had a great phrase, like a lot of people I interview, you had trouble landing on what is your favorite thing that you can talk about.
Yeah.
So how was it you described yourself?
Oh, a hummingbird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a really good friend who is a life coach who kind of stumbled across the theory of hummingbirds, where you get your energy from flitting from thing to thing. So, yeah, I think I was saying to you, and I can think of some of our friends from junior high school who knew in junior high school what they wanted to do and what they were really passionate about. But I guess I've sort of flitted around. And I think since you've started this podcast and I've been listening, I've been thinking, what is the thing that's the kind of common thread that I could follow through and say, well, that took me on different journeys through my life. So I've settled on gardening, actually. And I think starting with my grandmother is a good place, because some of my earliest memories are of planting plants with her in the garden when she was over in America for summers. So, yeah.
Great.
Brings it all together.
So are you talking about flower gardens or vegetable gardens?
I'm talking about anything that involves soil and sunlight and water and being outside. So I think those earliest memories are planting busy lizzies in the flower garden that we had, or sort of like in our side yard in North Carolina before we moved to Indiana. And we planted busy lizzies, and I'd never heard of them. And of course, it was just after my sister Elizabeth was born. And I was like, that's so cool. We found a flower that's named after her. So, that's my very first memory of planting things. Although I'm sure I must have had a little patch of earth there, like very kind of, Mary from the Secret Garden, like definitely as a kid, like being out in the garden and digging in the soil was a thing that I did with my mom and my grandmother.
Yeah.
Sure.
We'll do some time traveling, but what does gardening look like today for you?
So today, we're really lucky, actually. We've got the house we have here in London it's an old terraced property. So the terraced houses in London are, all connected on one street. And we've got three bedrooms, but we've got what should be a tiny little garden. But the person that we brought the house from had brought half of the garden that we back onto. So we have sort of a two-layer back garden.
Oh, neat.
Which means I've planted loads and loads of fruit trees and raspberry canes, and I've got a sort of raised bed that I do vegetables in when work and small children and everything else don't get in the way. We've got a huge big tree that Richard has built a treehouse in that the kids haven't played in very much, so he's threatening to turn into a smokehouse so that we can smoke.
Seems legit.
Why not? If you've spent half of lockdown building a treehouse, you can probably do whatever you like. But so that's me. I've done lots of community gardening though through time, and I think I've always had even just pots in the back garden. Like I can think of my first proper working job in Newcastle, and I had this like little courtyard. Newcastle's freezing. I'm trying to think of the equivalent of what it would be like in the States, but it was
pretty far north, but it's not Scotland, right?
No, but it's not about an hour and a half from the Scottish border.
Okay.
And in the winter time, when I was working in Longbenton, which is a sort of big government center there, I would go into the office at 9 and the sun wouldn't be up, and I would come home at like 5 and 6 and it would be gone already. Like the sun would set at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, but that meant we had lovely, glorious long summer nights. And I had a little courtyard there, which I turned into like a Mediterranean paradise with tomatoes. And I didn't grow flowers a lot until just recently.
Yeah.
But lots of vegetables and herbs and things that I could cook with. So
wonderful. Yeah, so you had started to say that your earliest memories are planting busy lizzies, which I've never heard of, but I will link to, I'm sure I can find them and I'll link to them in the show notes. So when do you feel, so you've got those early memories, mm-hmm. when do you feel like you had like a more active role or more like ownership over some gardening?
So when we moved to Indiana, actually, my mom got into something called square foot gardening, mm-hmm. which was all about.
I remember definitely the rage. Yeah.
Yeah. That was like a big thing. And I remember we had to get railway sweepers in, and there was like a big thing about getting the right railway sweepers to build this square bed that was in the back garden in the house in Terre Haute. And that it was all divided up with like boards that you could walk across.
Yeah.
And I remember helping in that garden. I feel like I was given a little patch in that garden as well of planting flowers and stuff that maybe was at the back of where she had the square foot gardening. And then just as we were, well, before we left Indiana, but we didn't know we were living in Indiana at the time, we put in asparagus. By then I was sort of an older teenager and was able to kind of turn over bigger patches. And we had this big patch that was down a little hill that we turned into an asparagus garden. And I've always wanted to grow asparagus because the thing with it is you put in the crowns and it takes like, 3 years before you can even start to begin to harvest it. And then we left like 2 years later, just as it was getting to that point. And I remember thinking, I hope somebody who buys this house realizes that that's what's under here. And you can, like, put in, I don't know, a hot tub or something over the top of it.
Right.
So yeah, I think that was the time where it was sort of like, oh, I actually really enjoy this. And I can remember really hot Terre Haute summers being like out digging weeds or pulling things up. And it's always been a place that kind of calms my head. And yeah, and I think there's I follow lots of different people on Instagram who are doing really fascinating things with mental health and gardening. And I think with lockdown, to have a little patch, you know, as Virginia Woolf said, like to have a room of one's own or a garden of one's own is such a luxury.
When I was in London in 2015, doing my grad school project, and we were working with Positive East. We were working with Positive East, which is an HIV charity on the east end of London. And they had this little courtyard, and we did all these focus groups and interviews. And a lot of especially the women who had immigrated from African countries. Mm-hmm. So they were like grandmas and they had HIV and they really missed their garden because the medicine that keeps HIV at bay advances your aging. Like your arthritis progresses faster when you have HIV and you're taking medicine. And so we did research and we proposed to them not just doing a raised garden, but doing tabletop, doing a garden that was like, so people didn't have to bend over to get into it.
Yeah.
Because they had this little courtyard, which in the 80s and 90s was where like people just went and smoked their cigarettes.
Yeah.
And hung out all day. But times have changed. And so we had recommended and pulled a ton of academic journal articles about the benefits of gardening for mental health, for physical health because of the movement, but also that if you do adaptive, build it in an adaptive space where people can stand up, that people then can garden longer into their life.
Yeah, it is. And it's so good for sort of bringing communities together. So where we live in East London, it's quite a diverse population. It's part of what we love about living in this part of London. And the kids' first primary school had this amazing outdoor space, but you know, the school didn't have the kind of funding or the time or the sort of person to take it on. And sort of slowly that patch of earth called to me, and I started a gardening club there, which meant that I was running a kind of free club for 12 kids a semester who would kind of come in and we would plant things. And sometimes I would come up with the activity that we were going to do for the day, you know, weeks in advance, and we'd be building really complicated bird feeders out of orange peels and things. And sometimes I would just go like, let's just dig around and have fun. There were amazing lavender bushes that, you know, somebody somewhere 15 years ago had the forethought to plant, but nobody ever did anything with. So I still got like bags and bags of dried lavender.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, which is great. And we'd make lavender bags and then sell them at like little community projects. And then people would come up and tell me that when they had been at the school, you know, they had grown the most fantastic pumpkins and green beans in that sort of bed. So it was nice. It was a really nice way to kind of meet the school community. It's just one of those things, though, I think isn't part of kind of mainstream education. And when you're graded on your math and your reading kind of scores, that element of sort of outdoor learning doesn't become the mainstream thing. Although I think it's much more popular now. So we have forest schools here in England.
What is a forest school?
Well, it would be, you know, I suppose it would be like sort of summer camp. So I have friends who've sent their kids to, you know, holiday camps where you learn how to build a fire and you learn how to kind of things from Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts probably, but much more around, you know, being outside all day and getting fresh air, which, you know, in a big city is kind of a nice to have.
So. Yeah. Yeah. The school, so I live across the street to walk around the park is a mile. So it's a quarter mile on each side of the block. It has an elementary school and a high school, 5 baseball fields, prairie reclamation areas that are fenced off where it's prairie reclamation because we're in the prairie. But the school does have on the south side of it, like garden plots for the students and community gardens in Chicago are super popular. And people are, there are wait lists. So once you get a plot, you better do something with it or they will take it away from you.
That is so true. I think that's so true everywhere. So my grandmother had an allotment, and now that we're talking about it, I can remember helping on hers when I was little. I'm walking. There's a famous story of me walking home carrying a giant rhubarb leaf that was as big as an umbrella and me being like really impressed with it. So I must have been quite small because all the rhubarb leaves are big. It was, yeah, I must have been very little that summer. But I have friends who had an allotment here. So it's called an allotment here because you're allotted the space. And two friends of mine had sort of went in on a joint one, and they kept saying to me, do you want to come down and you can be our third party? And they just didn't go down regularly enough. And they ended up having to give the keys back and hand it on to the next person on the wait list because they weren't deemed to be sufficiently using the space. One day when I am less busy, I might be keen for an allotment. And I worked with a guy in years ago who had an amazing allotment. He used to bring in these fantastic like Italian artichokes. Ooh. And he was like, I just grow them because they're beautiful. I don't actually like eating them. But because they come back every year, I always have this like glut in the summer of artichokes. And I think that's the other thing I love about gardening is that, you know, you get a glut and that gives you the ability to kind of share with other people. Yeah. And start those conversations. So during lockdown, I got a little bit overexcited and brought a small like greenhouse, and I let the kids help me. This was probably in about like late March, early April. Sure.
When we thought it was going to be 3 months and done.
It was just going to be a few weeks. Yeah, absolutely. And so Alex helped me plant some kale, and I turned around and realized he'd put like the entire bag of seeds like into 3 or 4 pots. So I just kept getting kale seedlings. And it was like, what an East London thing to be growing and knocking on your neighbor's door and going, would you like some kale seedlings? But honestly, I just walked past a neighbor's house the other day and he's got this massive kale like growing outside his door. And I was like, oh, I know where that came from. But it's nice for swaps. And we also put in, when we moved in, we put in a fig tree. And very soon after we moved in, I was doing some flower gardening in the front garden, and a man walked by and said, I used to live in this house in the 1970s. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, I said, well, it's probably changed quite a lot because we've done work to it. And he said, tell me one thing, is the fig tree still in the back garden? And I was like, where was the fig tree? And he said, well, it was just when you come outside the door on the left-hand side. And I said, that's quite weird because that's where I planted a fig tree a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you want to come and see? And I brought this strange man through there. Victor was like, what are you doing? And took him back. And he's like, that's exactly where the fig tree was. And it had the most amazing figs. And the tree has gone from strength to strength. So we've been here 10 years this summer. And it's got to the point where like this year's figs, I couldn't give them away fast enough. I was just like taking baskets of figs down to neighbors going, please take these figs. Yeah. And I'm the only one who eats them. So Richard and the kids aren't really that bothered, but the dog likes them now, which is good.
Huh. I wouldn't imagine that.
I know. I tried to put them in a cake and then realized I'd left a crucial ingredient out of the cake, like the amount of sugar that you were supposed to put in. And that was why nobody ate the cake. So now that I can't even convince them to eat the cake. But luckily we have some very good Turkish friends who kept saying to me, have you got any more figs? I was like, yes, actually I do. Here, have them. Yeah.
And then what are the other fruit trees that you have?
So when both of the kids were born, we brought them both a tree. Mm-hmm. So Sophie has an apple tree because her birthday is in September, and the apples are usually ripe around her birthday, which is quite nice. So then when Alex came along with a February birthday, we thought, oh, this is going to be a bit harder. But we brought him a cherry tree that's supposed to bloom in late February, just a couple of weeks after his birthday. Okay. Which is pretty good. So those are both planted now. They were in pots for years, but I think we've put down enough roots that we felt it was safe to kind of put them in.
Yeah.
And last year I think because we were here as well, I realized that one of our squirrels was coming and eating all the baby cherries before they went ripe. So we netted it, and it was a very prolific year for cherries here as well, which was quite good. So Yeah.
That's
another
nice.
Joy of being at home and being able to look out the window and see who's stealing all of your fruit. But then I've got a pear tree, another apple tree, and a plum tree down in the bottom part of the garden. Yeah.
That's amazing. So,
yes. And my lovely in-laws brought me a hazel tree, which has truffle inoculated into the roots.
Okay.
So in another couple of years, we'll be able to apparently dig down and find truffles, but you can call me back in for that one. I don't know if that's going to really work.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I guess you'll have to get the neighborhood truffle pig to swing by.
Well, see, we got a beagle this summer, so they've got great noses. Apparently you can train them.
Oh.
So, yeah. Although I don't know if I'd want, I mean, she's in that garden all the time. And if she got too excited, we'd probably never see a truffle because she'd just
right
go for it all the time. I did like her commanding is not that good yet, but she's still only 6 months old. So
that is, I have also have a lot of friends who did quarantine puppies. So
lockdown dogs. So we got a beagle, two doors down also got a beagle. And further down, they got lockdown Lola, who's like a French bulldog. So yeah, the number of dogs on our street has multiplied significantly.
Yeah. I think living alone without animals in this, to me, is like my nightmare. At least I can say I'm talking to the cats.
Yes. Yeah. Mom actually said to me soon after we got Ripley, she said, that dog is bringing you all quite a lot of joy. And so although there are moments in pet ownership that are not the most enjoyable, there are lots of moments in the day where I think, yes, this is just like this moment has brought me joy.
Yeah.
This week it has been that we've been trying to find indestructible dog toys. And so if any of your listeners have a recommendation for an indestructible dog toy, that would be great, because the two I brought this week, one got destroyed in 4 hours and one made it for about 7 hours.
Wow. Because you did get your degree in literature, do you have gardening attachments? Are there any books when you think of gardening that those gardens in fiction inspire you?
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, I feel like so two of my sister-in-laws are big bookstagrammers. So they have brought me many books over the years. Lots of Virginia Woolf, you know, talks about the gorgeousness of Bloomsbury and the gardens in the sort of country houses that they lived in. So, and I think when I was little, you know, The Secret Garden was one of my absolute mm-hmm. favorite books. That idea of kind of having a little walled space that was all yours and
yeah.
putting down bulbs, which I did recently, I think last weekend when I suddenly thought, oh, my thing is gardening. I'd been out in the garden putting down bulbs for the summer. And I thought, it's just the joy of like months later, the thing that you did in the bleakest, coldest part of winter right. becomes this beautiful purple allium. I quite like that. And I did a training course years ago that was all about finding your happiness. And the premise behind it was that you needed sort of four elements for really great, you know, to have proper happiness. So there was the kind of gratification of doing something is part of it. The altruistic nature of something yeah. adds a kind of element to happiness. The kind of delayed reaction that you have to wait for something patiently is part of it. And I can never remember what the fourth thing was. Maybe it was something outside of yourself that was, you know, that's the altruistic thing, isn't it, for everybody? I'll find out what the fourth thing was and I'll send it to you. But the gift at the end was a packet of morning glory seeds. Which every time, and then it was like, plant these, and when they bloom, it'll remind you of the fact that you did this course, and you know, it'll bring joy to everybody who sees it. It's the delayed gratification. You have the enjoyment of seeing something beautiful.
Yeah.
And I guess that to me kind of was like, yeah, that's how I feel when I'm out in the garden. I can get lost out there for hours. Like I'll sort of go, I'm just going to go out and do one job. And Richard's like, I'll call you in when it's dinner time.
Right. When the yeah. sun goes down, be exactly. inside when the sun goes down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our parents did. I don't know if you remember like the wireless and signal catalogs. They were
yes.
like the catalogs of NPR.
Yes, I do.
And so one year my dad bought the wildflower garden from it. And it was like this tube of seeds. And he rented a tiller, probably from U-Haul. And they tilled up the side yard and left a path down the middle. And this was in junior high. And we just like planted wildflower seeds. And for years, my parents' side lawn was just flowers. And so we only had to mow like the path down the middle. And then there was the persimmon tree and a black walnut tree.
I remember the black walnut tree. Yeah. That was a big old tree, wasn't it?
It was a big tree, good for climbing.
Yeah.
And then we did also had like the monster pine tree that was big and scary. Because it would, like, the branches got close enough to the bedroom window that it, during a big storm, it felt very poltergeisty.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Banging against the window.
Yeah. But the persimmons were, it was just, once they started producing fruit.
Yeah.
And it's not the type of persimmons that they sell in the store here. It was like a purple, persimmon. That until it was ripe, if you ate a bite of it before it was ripe, it would just like suck all of the juices out of your mouth. You would pucker like a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Was it the persimmons that you used to use to make a persimmons pudding from the Cover Bridge Festival? Because my mom went on a quest to try and perfect that recipe.
Yeah. Like purple. One year. Yeah. Purple persimmons like that.
Okay, because here they're like orangey, yellowy color.
Yeah, that's in the stores here too. They're purple, and I'm like, or they're yellow. They're that orangey, and they have like a really firm skin. And I'm like, no, a good persimmon is purple and wrinkly, and practically rotten.
This is probably why we've never been able to perfect the recipe. We've been buying the wrong persimmons all these years.
Yeah, but I don't know where you and the seeds inside. If you open the seeds up, and you cracked a seed open, if there was a spoon shape in it, then the winter was going to be one way. And if there was a fork, the winter was going to be a different way.
Oh, that's good. I love all of that about because I think there's all that notions of history passed down on herbs and all those sorts of things. I love that. And I did join the apothecary's garden. What's it called? The Chelsea Physics Garden, I did it a couple of years ago. And it's one of those things where my aunt was coming through town and she quite wanted to go and I'd always wanted to go.
Yeah.
So when we got there, it was one of those things where, well, if you sign up, you know, to become a member, the cost of today, you can come back again. And I thought, I would love to come back. And I don't go that often, but I'm still a member. And they have the most gorgeous pomegranate tree.
Ooh.
And it's sort of growing against the wall. So there is a pomegranate tree down in our garden, but it's probably not in a very good spot. I've also planted feijoas, which are like a New Zealand fruit. They're kind of, they're also, we get them in the UK from Colombia. So like a South America or a Southern Hemisphere fruit. And it's like, it's not like anything else. It's like a giant green thing in the shape of a kiwi fruit, but inside it's a sort of pear apple feijoa taste, and you sort of eat it by the spoonful. But my dad's father had a feijoa tree in his garden that was so prolific that when I used to go and visit them, you know, on sort of trips from uni, I would always come back with a giant box full of feijoas because he would have like just boxes and boxes. So yeah, he probably kept an entire year of students from getting scurvy because he has a high vitamin C fruit that just came free and everybody was like, yes, feijoas. So yeah, so I brought feijoa bushes here, but they haven't yet produced anything. So
I mean, there's a slight difference in climate.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's quite warm here in London though. I've got a lemon tree and the fig tree right outside the back door and they don't come in. They're just out all year, which people find really odd that we managed to have a lemon tree that produces fruit in the garden that doesn't go under glass or anything.
That's wonderful.
I know. Well, I'm jealous of your snow because we had a little tiny bit of snow yesterday, but it didn't settle. So
yeah, I was so envious of the snow in Spain last week.
Yeah, the one in Madrid. Yeah. Those photos look great.
Like, if we have to be locked down, which we do,
yeah,
it is the right thing to do. It's the moral thing to do until we get this vaccine out. I just want to be cozier, and a big snowfall would make it so cozy to stay home.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I've been through a lot of like nice scented candles, mm-hmm, and like things to make the house more hygge is definitely, definitely a thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you've got a new president coming on Thursday, so that's going to be excitement.
Thank God. And by thank God, I mean thank the community organizers who did vote registration and campaigning. And I'm just holding my breath.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the worst has happened yet.
Really? That's I was saying to you before that, that other than gardening, my other kind of hobby at the minute is listening to podcasts about politics. I listened to a lot of Brexitcast when that was a big story here in the UK. That's now become Newscast, and it is really interesting. But I've had to move more to Gardener's Question Time and American podcasts just to kind of break the monotony of the news cycle here. But yeah, some of the stuff that is coming out of the States at the minute is quite scary too, isn't it?
It is.
Just that really everybody's scary. The locking down Capitol buildings and stuff in all 50 states sounds a bit frightening. So
yeah, it's scary. I think what worries me is the what we have never done as a country is grapple with our. We have never grappled with slavery in the way that Germany grappled with Nazism. Like, we truly never looked in the mirror. We were like,
yeah,
it's fine. Yeah. You know, we transferred the yoke of slavery to prisons. We hid it behind law and order. And we just have never, as a country, looked in the mirror and made the changes necessary. And now, because of a lot of things, but I do think that the algorithms that run our information gathering, right? If you're just like a regular person, yeah, getting the news online, and the algorithm learns you, and like you're fed what you're fed, and that there's
have we been reading the same book? I'm nearly finished with Weapons of Mass Destruction.
I haven't read it.
It's okay. It's fascinating. It's basically, well, it'll back up the theory of what you're talking about. Every chapter is a different way that algorithms are kind of encouraging the worst stereotypes that there are in the world, and making people who are worse off even more worse off, and making people who are able to afford it, you know, able to kind of get around those algorithms, yeah, and the things that they're suggesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was good
to read. I know it's getting close to dinner time for you. So I'll float one more theory and then I'll get your promos. But I have a theory that those of us who went to Woodrow Wilson and had Mr. Hadley for art and studied those murals, murals.
Yeah.
I have a theory about how it like imprinted on our future politics. Because there were murals there. I went to university school, which also had WPA murals that were like very like about socialism and anti-capitalist and about farming and cooperation and integration, very anti-segregation. And I want so much for someone with a PhD to study us. And like, what did it mean to walk by those murals every day?
Yeah, I haven't thought about them in years until you've said that. But I remember the agricultural side of that. There's kind of fields of wheat, mm-hmm, and then there's really industrial looking, like farm machinery in them as well. And I remember being really annoyed by the farm machinery and wanting to see more of the kind of agrarian.
Not Gregorian.
Not Gregorian, but these sort of very golden wheat fields at a time where I was probably listening to a lot of Sting singing Fields of Gold and things like that. Like, it just, that really resonated with me, that part of the picture. And then the bit that was over the archway that we used to walk up the stairs to, which had all different types of people in that mural. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think I probably would have been very left-wing, although as a civil servant, I'm not supposed to have any kind of political leaning. I'm very neutral and have no stance on anything, but obviously I do, because that's all I do is listen to podcasts and hang out in the garden. So,
So where can you mentioned that you have a gardening Instagram? Where can people follow you on that?
You can find me on From a Hackney Garden, which is my Instagram. I'm on Twitter, but I don't tweet very often. I usually go on it to find out why there are helicopters circling or ambulances running past, because that seems to be faster than the news
cycle. So much faster,
Speaking of algorithms, it's quite frightening. Yeah, so that's probably the best place to find me, on Instagram under From a Hackney Garden. And some of my gardening projects will be on there as well. So I work with the local station on a community gardening project there, which is Energy Gardens London. And I do bulbs for the street. So just kind of, it's a nice way to bring community together. And I'm hoping people have a little patch or a little pot to get to.
What is bulbs for the street?
So I get the kids on the street to plant. We have little trees that got put in a couple of years ago that have a tiny little patch of earth. So in a very urban street, we have like warehouse apartments across the road from us, where they haven't got any garden space. And so we plant bulbs and sort of annuals in the tree squares.
Nice.
And it's nice because so many people had said to me last summer, I walk past those tulips every day and they cheer me up. Aww. And I think, oh, that's good. Yeah.
I love it. So. Well, Vicky, this has been a blast.
It's been lovely to see you.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the next time you come to London. I hope it's not too far in the future. I'll take you to Chelsea Physics Garden when you come.
I look forward to it. Great. Well, London is high on my list for the next trip. I think I'll have to take like 6 weeks of vacation and just go.
Although just come.
We work remote now, so I could.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world of travel once I get that shot.
That's true. And you know, the other thing is, I think finding ways to use this technology. I'm kind of glad that you found podcasts during lockdown, because it's been really nice to be able to kind of listen to you, even if I'm not chatting to you. And things like family Zooms and doing online quizzes with friends, is you sort of think, why weren't we doing that before for all the people that we don't live in the same city with? So it's nice.
I agree. Awesome. Well, have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.